Alan Crane Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2022. Today, review for the midterm exam. The exam is 40 questions. You have 75 minutes. The questions are multiple choice, true and false, math questions, and also there's a matching section. And I'll go through what I think you should know for it, and then I'll let the floor come open for you to ask me questions about the exam as well. And we should be able to get through about everything. Now, I also want to point out that you should have gotten an email message with a link to that Zoom review session that I did on Saturday night. So you see all the calculator routines for the different math questions that will, for the math questions that will be on the exam. You see for each kind what to do there. So that should help you as well. As a matter of fact, you could, if all you want to know is those calculator routines, you can just load the video and then fast forward to where I do that part. Now again, you have a 4x6 note card, both sides, and in ReggieNet, you will have available, you can print out that formula sheet, ratios formula sheet. So that'll help you as well. And it is on ReggieNet, the test is, so bring your laptop, obviously. If it's not working, you can tell me that you're going downstairs to the computer lab and you can take it there as well. And accommodations students should go over to SAS to take their exam at the time of the class. Well, actually, you should probably start earlier. Okay, now the first thing that I'm going to do, and this is part of the review, on the test you will have a screenshot of the screen for a stock. And so you make sure that you know how to read these screens and all of that good stuff. Starting out, know the difference between a bull and a bear market, because I'll ask you about that. And also, some of the details about that, I would certainly be, I won't ask you about commodities markets, but I could ask you bonds. Okay, if the yields are going down, that means the prices are going up. You should know that, and if the yields are going up, the bond prices are going down. So you should know that simple thing about reading a bond screen, as well as more important fundamental principle, price and yield are inversely related. As far as a stock screen goes, let me pull something up here. I'm not being very creative. Target. I'll show you a screen just like this. Matter of fact, I'll just cut off all of the extra stuff so that all you can see is the company and the numbers, and then I'll ask you some questions. And I'll ask you one where, okay, compared to the market, is this stock much less risky, a little less risky, about as risky, a little riskier, or is it much riskier? And so you would look at that one. It'll be very obvious, that one will be, so you won't have to worry about, well, is it a lot or a little. In this case, this is about as risky as the market, 1.02 beta. And I'll ask you, okay, does the, let me do another one. This one's getting, I gave you one that is pretty clear. This one might not work. Oh yeah, it will. Okay, this one will do. American Eagle Outfitters, ticker symbol AEO. On this one, yes, it is considerably riskier than the market portfolio. The PE ratio does not agree with that. I'll ask you, does the PE ratio agree with the beta? And in this case, no, they don't. The PE ratio is well below 30. The beta is well above 1. So these are disagreeing with each other about the risk level of the security. Now, I could ask you also, you buy one round lot, in other words, 100 shares of AEO. What will you pay? And in this case, you would pay $1,000. And if you would pay $1,022. I'm sorry, because the ask is 10.22. If you were to say that, 100 shares. So 100 shares at $10.22 a share would be $1,022. And if I were to sell 100 shares, one round lot, I would get $1,000. $10 times 100. So I will ask you that. Just type in the number. Yeah, that's kind of mathy, but it's pretty straightforward math. Just don't make sure you multiply by 100, okay? Because I'm telling you to do a round lot. I'll say, okay, is this company profitable? In this case, the answer is yes. Why? Because the EPS is positive, earnings per share. That's earnings divided by the number of shares. So if the earnings is positive, the EPS would be positive. So yes, this is a profitable corporation. I would also ask you, does this company pay a dividend? The answer in this case is yes, it does. See the dividend right there, forward dividend and yield. So yes, it does pay a dividend. So this is just, have you been watching when I did this every class at the beginning so that you can read that information? That would be the extent of the information I ask you on the midterm, is what I've just described for you. Look at the beta, PE ratio, EPS, and the bid and the ask, and the dividend. That's all I would ask you about. And all you have to do is basically just look at the numbers and answer the question. So that's one set of questions on the exam. So if you got that, you got some decent points right there. Now, getting down to the exam, well, actually, I suppose I could just put the exam up here for you to see. Nah, I won't do that. Come on. Okay, I'm going to actually look at the exam so that I'm sure. Now, I'm not going to tell you everything. Obviously, there will be holes in it, but this is your study guide. You write down what I'm telling you, and you've got right where you should be looking. Now, remember that the exam is based upon lectures. If it's in the book too, great. But if it's not in the book, but I said it, you're accountable. But if I haven't talked about it, but it's in the book, that's off the table completely. So now, let me find the exam so that I can walk through it with you. I'll do a couple of sweeps here just to make sure I catch everything that we're doing here going along. Okay, first things first. Make sure you know the difference between accounting and finance. Especially in terms of costs. In finance, we care about future expected costs, opportunity costs, replacement costs. In accounting, they're all about sunk costs, historical costs, depreciation, and other things that don't actually exist. So make sure you know that difference. And know that in finance, we are aiming to get free cash flow. That is not the same as profit. And I'll ask you about that on the exam. Now, there will be things that are definitions or are related to definitions. Like, for example, liquidity. Make sure you know my definition, not the internet's definitions. Liquidity is the efficiency with which an asset can be converted to another asset. You'll find other definitions. And in the multiple choice, I'll give you those as well as the right definition. Just like on that quiz where everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people ran to the internet to sneak the answer and they got it wrong about the last time stagflation was a problem because the internet told you, in fact, the term stagflation wasn't even around in the time when the internet's talking about it. The term was invented during two presidents after that. So it's not a good idea to use the internet. You will get killed by it on a professional exam in a university. Okay. Know what a corporation is, as opposed to a sole proprietorship or a partnership. Corporations issue stock. They're the only kind of company that can. Corporations separate the liabilities of the corporation from the owners, the stockholders, the shareholders. So in other words, you need to know that a corporation, the liabilities of the corporation, don't spill over to the owners. That's not a sole proprietorship and a partnership, where all the liabilities of the company belong to the owners personally. Okay. Now, intrinsic value. Make sure you know the difference between that and market value. Going back to liquidity, just for a minute here, a couple more things about liquidity is that liquidity is associated with low expected return. In other words, this dollar bill I have right here, it's not going to return anything in itself. I'm not going to look in here and see baby dollar bills coming out of it. Things that I can turn into something else really quickly don't create anything at all. They're easy to use, highly liquid, but they don't make much. On the other hand, someone like you, sir, I cannot quickly turn you into another asset. You are illiquid, unless I've got a big blender. But you will create a lot of return over your life. A house is highly illiquid. You can't convert it into something else quickly at all. But it has the prospect of a great deal of appreciation during your holding period. So intrinsic value, or rather, liquidity and intrinsic value are inversely related. Liquidity and expected return are inversely related. Now, liquidity and intrinsic value. Things that are highly liquid don't have any much value in and of themselves. You can't use it until you've done something else with it. If it's highly liquid, it's probably not going to have any real value. You can't use this for much of anything. You might blow your nose on it or use it for toilet paper or maybe to start a campfire, but it really doesn't have any value. However, things that are illiquid have high intrinsic value. That's just the way it is. A house has high intrinsic value, but it also, because you can use it, you can live in it, you can do things with it, but it also is highly illiquid. Okay, you have great intrinsic value, but you're illiquid. So make sure you know the relationship between intrinsic value and liquidity. Now, going on here, we've gone through that. Okay, a couple of important matters as far as markets go. Capital versus money markets. Money markets are short-term, capital markets are long-term. So in other words, if a corporation wants to sell stock, it would be doing so in a capital market because the company is selling ownership in itself for big long-term purposes. A company that raises money through 30-year bonds, it's borrowing money for a long-term use. Now, on the other hand, a money market would be if you aren't going to use the money for very long. I mentioned in a previous lecture, sometimes companies borrow money for 30 days on what's called commercial paper. They're going to the money markets to do that. You get a personal loan for 6 months. That would be accessing the money markets because it's a short-term use of funds. And so the investors, the lenders, are those who want their return. They want to get their funds back very quickly, within a year. In that same regard, debt, you need to make sure you know the distinction between a bill, a note, and a bond. A bill is less than a year in duration. A note is from 1 to maybe about 10 years. And a bond is a debt obligation that goes more than 10 years. Like, for example, if you borrowed money for 6 months, you would be issuing. The issuer is the borrower. The issuer is the seller. You would be issuing a bill. The person lending you the money is the investor, the lender, the buyer. So I'm going to give you one. So, for example, you, madam, lend me money for 6 months. I have issued you a 6-month bill. And so there will be 5 descriptions. One will be you are the, I am the seller of a note. No, it's a bill. So make sure you go through those multiple choice and identify whether it's a bill, a note, or a bond. That should get rid of some of the multiple choice answers right there. And then the next thing is, if I'm the borrower, I am the issuer, the seller. You are the investor, the purchaser, the lender. So go through, get rid of the ones that say, what as far as bill, note, bond, which ones, the only ones that there will probably be only 2 or 3 that will have the right name for it, and then figure out who is the issuer, the borrower, and who is the investor, the lender. And you should have that one down. Now, going back to markets again, make sure you know the difference between a primary market and a secondary market. If a company is selling its stock to an investment banking syndicate, that is a primary market transaction. Just like if a private corporation sold stock to sophisticated investors, that would be a primary market transaction. But if you're in the stock market just buying and selling stocks, that's secondary. It's just investors buying and selling stocks from and to each other. That's all that is, secondary market. So make sure that you know that. Moving on. Okay, now I will not ask you any math questions about net present value and internal rate of return. However, I will ask you to show me that you know what is going on. So for example, if I do a net present value question, if I raise the discount rate, that's going to lower the net present value. If I lower the discount rate, that will bring up the net present value. Now, if the discount rate makes the net present value 0, that discount rate is the special one called the internal rate of return. So make sure you know, I'll throw a question at you where you need to think about what this discount rate is compared to the internal rate of return. If the discount rate is higher than the internal rate of return, then the NPV will be negative. Again, if the discount rate is higher than the internal rate of return, the NPV will be negative. If the discount rate is lower than the internal rate of return, the NPV will be positive. If the discount rate is lower than the internal rate of return, the NPV will be positive. If the NPV is exactly zero, then the discount rate was the internal rate of return. Sure can, the whole thing. If the discount rate is higher than the internal rate of return, the NPV will be negative. If the discount rate is lower than the internal rate of return, then the net present value will be positive. If the net present value comes out to be exactly zero, well, your discount rate was exactly the internal rate of return. Obviously, I want you to make sure you know the difference between a bull market and a bear market. That should be an easy question. Okay. Going back through, before I get to the numbers thing, let me run back through there. Oh, as far as liquidity goes, current assets. What is the most liquid current asset, and what is the least liquid current asset? Yeah? Say that again? Well, I'm telling you, you should know that. That's okay, though. What do you think it is? Okay. And? Yes. See, because, I mean, we even, for the quick ratio, the acid test, we subtract the inventory because it really isn't liquid at all. As a matter of fact, a balance sheet usually lists the current assets from the most liquid down to the least liquid. So that's why you see inventory is the last of the current assets, is because it's not really liquid. You can't turn that into cash very efficiently at all or into anything else. Okay, I'm just running through here. Oh, about corporations. Make sure you know priority. Who has a priority claim? Who has a prior claim on the cash flows? Is it the stockholders, the shareholders, or is it the bondholders, the debt holders? Which one gets paid first? Always. Doesn't matter whether it's day-to-day or in liquidation. If there's an interest coupon due, do the bondholders get that before the shareholders get a dividend? Or do the dividends come out before the bondholders get their coupon? Who has the prior claim? Make sure you know that. Now, as far as ratios go, you can have your ratios sheet, but I'm not going to have you calculate any ratios. I will have you tell me what you see in ratios. So, for example, which would be a larger number, the current ratio or the acid test? Remember that the current ratio is current assets over current liabilities. The acid test is the current assets minus inventories over the current liabilities. So which one would be the larger? The one that has all the current assets in the numerator, or the one that has the current assets minus inventory in the numerator? That's how you think about the questions that I'll ask you. Another one, which is always larger, the return on assets or the return on equity? They both have net income in the numerator. But the return on assets, the denominator is all of the assets. In the return on equity, the denominator is just the owner's equity. So which one would always be higher? The one that has all of the assets in the denominator, or the one that has only part of the assets in the denominator? Think about that. Okay, going on here. Making sure my battery doesn't run out on my podcast recorder here. That would be disastrous here. Okay. Now, not doing math, but thinking about it. Which would have a higher future value? Two identical annuities. One is an ordinary annuity where the payments are at the end of each period. The other is an annuity due where the payments are at the beginning of every period. Which one of those would have a higher value? You got an ordinary annuity. You put $100 in every month. And then you put in the last $100 and then immediately take it all out. If that were an annuity due, you'd put the $100 in at the beginning of every month, and then the last month's payment would ride a month with the rest of the payments, and then you would take it all out. So which one would have a higher future value? Make sure you know that, because I will find a way to ask that on the exam. Okay, interest rates. Make sure you know what is in the risk-free rate. The risk-free rate has the real rate of return and the expected inflation premium in it. Now, the risk premium, that's the default premium, the maturity premium, and the illiquidity premium. The illiquidity premium is there only if the original lender would have a hard time getting rid of that loan to another investor. That would be the case, for example, with credit cards. Bank would have some difficulty unloading its credit card loans to another bank. A personal loan, that a bank would probably have some difficulty finding another bank that would buy its personal loans and take them over. However, home mortgages, there is this vast trillions of dollars market I told you about called the secondary mortgage market. The banks sell those within hours, and there's a vast market to buy them from the banks. Same is true with student loans, that they sell those within hours too. So the illiquidity premium would be only for debt securities that the original lender would have a hard time selling it to someone else. If I borrowed money from, for example, you on a note, I gave you a note, promissory note, I owe you $100 in a year, you would probably have a really hard time finding someone else who would take over that loan if you wanted your money back. So you would charge me a lot of extra interest for the fact that you're stuck with it for the whole year. Now, the default premium. That is for credit risk. Now, obviously, if there's an asset backing the loan, the default premium will be lower, like a home loan. If you default on your home loan, the bank will just take your house and get its money back. The default premium actually on student loans is low because the government guarantees them. A bank that makes a student loan, if you don't pay it, the government will pay it off and then come after you itself. Now, the maturity premium, it's just going to get bigger as the life of the loan increases. So in other words, the maturity premium on a one-year loan, there's very little that interest rates will do in a year. But if you get out to 30 years, interest rates could do a lot of things in 30 years. So there's more uncertainty. Therefore, the maturity premium is higher. kind of a trick question. Which would have a higher maturity premium? A AAA corporate bond, a 30-year AAA corporate bond, or a 30-year government treasury bond? The answer is they'd have the same maturity premium because they're the same length. So the risk exposure is the same to both of them. However, the treasury bond would have no default premium. No treasuries don't have, some would argue they got a teeny little bit of a default premium, but it is virtually not there because the government won't default on its debt obligations. Okay, that's pretty much what you need to know about interest rates. Also, by the way, just to go back to something, the quizzes. The answers are available to you, the key answer key for each question for the first for those four quizzes. What you need to do on that is just go back through. I copied and pasted, literally copied and pasted, seven questions from the quiz into the midterm. And then I copied and pasted more and changed the numbers or changed the wording somewhat. So those quizzes are a great source for studying. If you can get those right and know why the answer is what it is, you're in good shape right there. Now, there is a matching part on this. Let me check right here real quick. Yeah, that matching part. That's 10, no. That's 12 and a half points. The matching section is 5 matching. And those are just definitions. You shouldn't have a problem with those at all. I mean, usually, the reason I put that on there is because it is very easy points for the test. Although, Lord knows some people, if you get one wrong, you'll get two wrong. So you might want to keep that in mind. Make sure you get those nailed down on it. Now, numerical. If you watch that Zoom session that I did on Saturday, I went through the numericals. You're going to have a loan. Just like on the quiz, you'll have a loan. You find me the payment, you find me the balance after a certain amount of time, and you find me the effective rate. That's one part of the exam. And that's very straightforward to get that, especially if you just watch the video and you know what numbers. Remember, where most people trip up in these is if it's monthly, the N will be times 12 and the I percent will be divided by 12. If it's weekly, the N will be times 52. The I percent will be divided by 52. It's that straightforward. Now, the other question will be the future value of an annuity. Now, this one, make sure that toggle, it's going to tell you the first words will be starting today. So that means it's an annuity due. Make sure that your TVM solver down there at the bottom is toggled to begin. Be careful because when you go to the loan questions, it has to be on end. Don't forget to do that. I saw that happen on the quiz. So anyway, the future value will be starting today. It'll be payments, regular payments, monthly or weekly payments. And all you do is you put in the number of years times the payments per year, drop it down, the APR divided by the number of payments a year, and then your payments, PMT, you will have no PV. The PV for a future value question will be zero. And then the FV will be the alpha solve. And you see, it's in that Zoom video. You should have gotten that as a link in your email, in your inbox, your university email inbox. You can even just sort of fast forward ahead to that if that's what you want to see. It's right there for you. Now let me go back through here and just make sure I've done a pretty good summary for your, for a study guide. Yeah? Yeah? As far as ratios go, something else. Make sure you know where a number would be worrisome. Like I said, you know, no ROA should be less than ROE, things like that. What number would be really a problem for times interest earned? Below what number? That would be good to know. And so I might ask something about that. You know, something along that line. Now, about like total debt to total assets, that has to be less than a certain number. Know what that number is. Debt to total assets, debts are a part of the total assets of a company. So if you take debt divided by total asset, it has to be less than a certain number. So make sure you know that. I'm looking here through here. Make sure you know that historical sequence of events from the 1950s through to the 1980s. And don't go to the internet for God's sake for that. Go to the lecture. Because the internet, just again and again, it's just a place for idiots to find answers that are not good. Looking here. Here's one. I almost forgot. NOPAT. Make sure you know what is in NOPAT and what is not in NOPAT. I won't have you calculate a NOPAT, but you need to know how NOPAT works. You also have to know how free cash flow works. But let's focus on NOPAT. Is cost of goods sold in NOPAT? Yes, it is. How about interest expense? No. What about taxes? Yes, because you have to take the operating income times 1 minus the tax rate. Know the formula for NOPAT so that if I say, is this in NOPAT, you can look down there and say, well, I don't see it there, so it must not be in. Now, as far as free cash flow goes, know what increases and what decreases free cash flow. So, for example, if my accounts receivable go up, does that increase free cash flow or does that hurt free cash flow, decrease it? It obviously would hurt it because receivables is money that I said I got that I didn't get yet. So it's going to decrease my actual free cash flow. On the other hand, if let's say my wages payable go up, well, that would actually improve my free cash flow because it's money I said I spent, I haven't paid it yet. So that would help. So in other words, current assets going up hurts free cash flow. Current liabilities going up helps free cash flow and vice versa. Make sure you know that. I will ask something about that. It'll be a multiple choice question. I think I've said enough. It's your turn. Ask me questions. What do you want to know? Can? you buy a house on a 30-year mortgage loan with an APR of 5.89%. One. Oh, my bad. You buy a $195,000 house. Yeah. On a 30-year mortgage loan with an APR of 5.89%. What are your monthly payments? Two. What is the balance on the loan after, so let's say 16 years, and what is the effective rate on the loan? Okay. Pulling up the calculator. Yes. Oh, for heaven's sakes. I had it on mute because I had the quiz, the exam up there. I see, in the back more than a few years ago, the mute would turn off. It would stop muting after 5 minutes. I didn't know that. I had the exam up there. And the mute went off, and there people were writing furiously, and I thought, damn, this is good. Of course, it was obvious what was going on. I look up there, I say, well, okay then, going to get 100% on those pages. Okay, I apologize for that. Yeah, thank you for letting me know. Apps, Finance, TVM Solver. I had a student calling it the TMI Solver, and I guess that actually kind of works. Okay, 30 years times the number of payments a year, 12. That's N. I percent, what did I say the? 5.89 divided by 12. N is times, I percent is divide. Now, in this case, make sure you put in a negative. The price value of the home was $195,000. Now we're going to get the payment. Leave the future value should be zero. FV should be zero for these. If it's not, you'll do the future value, that annuity due problem, you'll do that first. So there will be a number in there. Just go down and make that a zero. Now for heaven's sakes, make sure you're on end with that toggle at the bottom. Now go up there to the PMT. And you just say alpha, enter. Your payments will be about $1,155 a month. You'll round to the nearest dollar on this question. As I said before, your payment on a typical mortgage should be somewhere between about $800 and $1,500. So if you got a number in there, at least you've got some idea, yeah, I'm in the right ballpark. It helps a little bit. I mean, if you got a payment that's more like $2,500, you're way too rich to be talking to me anyway. So yeah, this looks like about right. You know, house is pretty expensive. APR that's not really great. Yeah, that's $1,155 looks about right. Okay, so now, so we've got one answer, 100, 1,000, $155. Now we go down and the next one. Whoops. We want to know the balance on the loan after 16 years. Come out of the TVM solver, second quit. Now it's still going to have that information in its head, and all you say is apps, finance, and you go down to BAL, 9. It'll come back to the main screen. You say, all right, 16 years times 12 payments every year. You put in the information in months, so it's going to want you to tell it how many months to find. And then you just, boom. You'll still owe $131,984. Notice that you're more than halfway through the loan, and you're not nearly halfway to the getting a zero balance. So keep that in mind. Okay, so now what's the effective rate? You just go apps, finance. You skid clear down to letter C, which is EFF. Enter. And then you say, okay, my APR, you key that in first. That was 5.89. Then you put a comma. How many payments a year do you make? I make 12 a year. And that's all you do. Say enter, 6.05%. Now, the effective rate should be a little more than the APR. That's the effect of the compounding. So if you get a number that's a little more than your APR, you're pretty sure that you've done it. You're okay. You're all good. So there you are. That's that. Does that answer your question? Now, don't get that wrong on the exam, okay? One of the good things, though, is that you've got all these examples. You've got the video examples where you see me doing it in real time, so you can actually stop it and back it and see me do the steps over again right there in the video. So, and this is just another example that you can use. And then you've got the quiz where you've got the answers, and you can do those, and you got it again. Now, I'll be in my office tomorrow. I'm there every day, weekday now, from 11:15 till 12:30. So if you've got something else you want to ask, I'm there for you. That's all I have for you. I thank you.